Before we get started, there's something you should know about the Chonilla podcast. We like to cuss. And if you don't want your kids to hear it, then listen to us when they're not around. But if you don't mind your kids listening to grown folks talk, then turn this shit up and let the show begin.
It's Friday night, I feel alright. The lights are bright and I'm feeling high. High on
okay.
Night, so run away.
Right? You said to yourself, oh my god, right?
Okay.
I guarantee you, you won't let the song stop.
Okay.
It starts to become really fun.
Okay.
Watch.
Hey, look, it's already starting.
Look.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh, the lyrics, I can't.
I know, but wait. You tell me when to stop it, okay?
Okay. I'm giving it a chance. Party. Free.
Adrenaline running through me, inhibitions relinquished. I'm under the influence, feeling so euphoric. DJ, keep them records spinning for.
Oh my god, the lyrics is so generic and typical.
The lights are bright.
Oh my gosh.
High on life, so run away. With me tonight.
Oh,
bad and that.
Oh my god.
Because it's bad and that.
Light is shining bright.
You done?
Oh, yeah. Why does it? Does the DJ kick it in?
No, it doesn't change at all.
Oh,
wait. There you go. Here's the bridge.
Tonight, don't leave me lonely. Take my hand and hold me tonight or night. It's Friday night. I feel all right. The lights are bright and I'm feeling high.
Hi.
Nope. I think we're good. Woo! This is like something a 12-year-old... No.
Friday night.
10... That's a 10-year-old song for like Barney.
Friday night.
Oh my gosh.
Welcome, everyone. You are hanging out at the Chonilla podcast, and I am your host, Clove.
And I am Shirley, a.k.a. Hal Johnson. And you're listening to the Chonilla podcast, the personal comedy journal of an interracial couple who explores the world from different perspectives and experiences.
Very nice.
Ooh, I didn't think I could push that through.
And it is Sunday, June 21st, 2020. At 3:15 p.m.
in the motherfucking Eastern Time.
Woo!
Hey, Clove.
It's Friday night.
It's Friday night. Hey, Clove.
Yes.
My AKA today is Hal Johnson. Do you know who that is?
Yes, Hal Johnson. Body break.
Yes, body break. That's all I remember. Body break. Oh, that. Oh. Is that a black? Oh my God. I'm just having a moment. So Hal Johnson, if you don't know who he is, he's like a Canadian treasure and you should know. He's a Canadian television host and former international level athlete. I didn't know he was an athlete.
I didn't know he was an international level athlete.
Yes,
holy
both. Not
snapples.
Only he's an international athlete, but Joanne, his boo and his wife, she's also an international level athlete.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they created their a television segment called Body Break. Body Break. It's a classic among Canadian pop culture. I mean, it is pop culture.
Oh, yeah. If you are from Canada and grew up in the 90s, you know about Hal Johnson and Body Break.
Yeah, like you have to.
Yep.
And so Johnson and McLeod were both, as I mentioned, international level athletes. Johnson with baseball and McLeod with the track and field discipline of hurdles.
Oh, okay.
Which totally makes sense now that I think about it, like her body type and everything.
Okay, gotcha.
So the duo self-financed the pilot for Body Break back in 1988. It was rejected by over 40 companies.
Of course it was.
And they received funding from Participation for 65 episodes.
Nice.
But they winded up doing 300 short episodes.
Nice.
They've produced, as well as
I wonder what the royalties are like on that.
Woo. I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised because of recent news with Hal.
Right.
That maybe there's going to be other, as well as single season television series. I didn't know they had a single season for Body Break. Maybe they tried. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
But they are definitely someone you need to check out.
I think one of my roommates did like some artwork for them back in the day.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, one thing I found out is like
college roommate.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
They did everything. Like, no, they're like us. Like, everything.
I don't do enough, though.
No, like, they they did the storyboard for their show. They edited their show. They produced their show.
I see what you're saying.
Like,
okay.
It was like her, both of them. Like, gotcha. They were hands-on on everything.
Good.
And I thought, like, they had maybe by, I don't know, maybe after a couple of episodes. You know what? Looking at it, I thought it was a government thing that the government gave them money and then they were able to get a crew and put it together to continue. No,
right,
they did everything.
Mm-hmm.
The whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Out of their pockets.
That's probably why it didn't look so mediocre
from back then.
Canada television.
But their first time that it went on, he mentioned that it was after Beachcombers, but we'll talk about that. It's
after
gonna be
Beachcombers. Holy,
remember the show Beachcombers? Yes.
Wow, that's taking me back. Right? Beachcombers.
Yeah.
Holy jeebus.
Yeah, I heard him say that and I was like, oh my gosh, Beachcombers.
Wow.
Who was in that show again? Oops, pardon me, my nose.
I can't remember the actors' names, but they're pretty iconic when it comes to Canada. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Anywho, it was definitely
Canada famous.
Yes, Canada famous. So more on this with Al Johnson. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
What's the word for the day?
Oh, the word for the day is nurturance.
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 Say that again?
Nurturance.
Nurturance.
What would you like? Would you like a clue? Would you like me to spell it? What would you like?
Yeah, give me the spelling. Should I guess the spelling? Yeah, let me guess the spelling.
If you want.
I'm so bad at spelling B. Nurturance. N-U-T-U.
No.
N-U.
Yeah.
Nurturance.
Nurturance.
N-U-T-E?
No.
N-U-T-I?
No.
N-U-T-O?
No.
Okay, how do you spell?
N-U-R-T-U-R-A-N-C-E.
N-U-R-T-U-R. Didn't I say N-U-T-U? Wait.
Yeah, N-U-T-U. Yes, you might have said that, but that's wrong.
Wait.
N-U-R-T-U-R.
Oh, I forgot the R. That's right. Oh, my gosh. Pay attention. Nurturance.
Do you want to guess what it means or do you want me to tell you what it means?
An assurance to nurture?
Maybe. Maybe, I guess.
It's to ensure some caring?
Yes. I'm not even kidding.
No.
Yeah, the definition is warm and affectionate physical and emotional support and care.
Oh! Ooh, shout out private school Latin. Wow.
Yeah, so what is it? An example of this is neglect. We figure out the reason. David's limbic system, unbeknownst to him, was equating eating the taking in of food with nurturance.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's from Running on Empty, Overcome Your Childhood Emotional Neglect.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I like that, nurturance.
Yes. So how's your week been?
It's been something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been so much better than the past like 3 weeks, I'd say.
Yeah, how come?
Yeah. Well, I've put more boundaries. I've put, you know, like, I'm not like, as much as the world's on fire, or it's going through a shift. I shouldn't say it's gone fire. It's going through some kind of a shift.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really looked out for myself a little bit more. I did find myself this week, though, I was kind of like, and I mentioned this to a friend, like a bit of a, I felt like a psychiatrist.
What?
Yeah, like just,
Did you get paid like a psychiatrist?
No.
Damn it.
No, it's close friends, my closest friends. It's
right.
Like, you know.
Right.
But in a good way, it's kind of like to hear sometimes someone feel what they feel in this time of COVID, but specifically this time of racial pandemic and injustice and really challenging injustices, specifically for Black lives and anti-Blackness and everything, fighting for that.
Yep.
It's kind of weirdly reassuring because it makes you feel like you're not the only person who thinks this.
Gotcha.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was, but I wasn't so in a space of anger and frustration and sadness and, you know what I mean? And confusion and all of that. And just like
more balanced.
Yeah. It was more balanced this week. Yeah.
Okay.
And so that was good.
Right,
and
right.
Taking again that week, like really advocating for myself and taking that week from work.
Yeah.
Really recharged me.
Good.
So much.
That's
so,
great to
so
hear.
Much. Yeah. So that was good. And, how about you?
You know, just, working. That's it.
That's true. You're not going outside.
No.
There's nothing adventurous.
No. Well, we went to the stars last night.
Yes. Yeah. We got to see the stars on the summer solstice.
Yeah. That was great.
Which was awesome.
It was so clear.
And then we got to, and I was just, when we're on our way, it was clear, wasn't it? That was like, I didn't feel. Well, so that day I went shopping with the girls. It was totally unplanned.
Right.
And I was like, girls, you want to go? Let's go shopping. Let's go get you some shorts, like summer clothes, right?
Gotcha.
And I wind up going to the store, forgot my wallet. I had to drive all the way back. And where I drove is like more in the city, you know, in the centralized portion of the city. So that was not a short drive.
No, it wasn't. Like, I remember when you guys got back and you said that you forgot your wallet. I was like, oh my God, are you guys actually going to go back?
Right. I was debating. I was almost going to say, girls, can we just go tomorrow?
Right.
But then I know that I want to focus on doing the shows on Sunday. And I was like, I don't want to do the whole like doing the show. And then it's almost time to like 2 hours left. You know, until the stores close and then we're rushing. I didn't want to do any of that. So I was determined. I said, we're going to get some clothes. We're going to get some clothes.
Get some clothes, motherfucker.
Yeah. So, So I had to like drive 30 minutes. It's like a 25 to 30 minute drive, you know?
It's a pain in the ass drive.
So I literally did an hour and a half driving because I went there, forgot my wallet. Then I thought.
Well, you got to spend time with the girls.
Though. I did. And then come back and everything like that. So that was a whole adventure. But then I mentioned, then I said, you know, Lita mentioned or asked, I don't know how it was brought up, but I think she brought the idea like, oh, can we like, you know, be kind of, you know, can we go to the park, right? To the place where we went to see the stars. And then so when I Googled, you know, we asked Google, like, hey, is the sky going to be clear? And it said that it was. And then so I looked into it while we were, like, waiting for food to get back.
Right.
And I saw, like, from all my nerdy search sites of stargazing that it will be. And so I had to learn how to read a chart.
Nice.
And so everything was leaning, like, this is the night to do it. And so we went. And as we were going, we were telling the kids, this is not only it's summer solstice because you saw the sun going down as the sun was the setting. You're like, oh, wow, look at the sun. It's huge.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And then when you said that, it made me I remembered, like, oh, June 20th is not only, it's the longest day of the year.
Yeah.
And it's also the summer solstice.
Right.
This is when the summer begins. So we're like, oh, maybe there'll be like a lot of Wiccans coming out today. And then as we were saying that on the road, we saw a sign on somebody's car that's like a triangle with a circle in the middle and a line in the middle.
Yeah.
And then it could be, winds up being like a Harry Potter kind of thing.
Yeah. Or they're a fan of J.K. Rowling. But
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. But also it ties with today. Not only it's Father's Day. Happy Father's Day.
Thank you very much.
But also it's...
Thank you for the candle.
You're very welcome. Shout out to the Black and Bougie, who has an amazing candles. Your candle says the perfect man.
Okay.
What's the smell that you have? Like, it's on, it should be under.
It is, let me see here, scented by soy wax candle and poured. Doesn't really say, or it's
at the
saying,
back, the smell.
Yeah?
Yeah, the name of the smell.
All right, let me see. Happiness.
Nice.
Cool. Smells good.
Yes.
Yes.
So shout out to the Black Bougie and... where was I going with this?
I'm not sure.
I can't remember anymore. Oh, yes. That it's not only, it's a national Happy Father's Day, right?
And
then it's National Indigenous Peoples Day, too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they also celebrate during National Peoples Day in their, I'm not sure in all nations, but I would say the majority do, the summer solstice as well.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So, which was, I don't know exactly what's done, but,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, this is the day to recognizing and celebrating the culture and contribution of the First Nations,
mm-hmm.
Inuit and Métis, Indigenous peoples of Canada. And I found out that there's a site... I found out that where we live is on the I think it's called the Wyandot people or Wendat. That's it. We're on the land of the Wendat people.
Okay.
Of Wendat Nation, I should say.
Okay.
Also called Huron Nation or Huron people.
Yes.
Which are in Iroquoian speaking peoples of North America who emerge as a tribe around the north shore of Lake Ontario.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And they were divided into four main nations. The Bear tribe, the Cord tribe, the Rock tribe. You know what? No, the Bear Nation, the Cord Nation, the Rock Nation, and the Deer Nation.
Rock Nation, for real?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The Rock Nation was located between Coldwater and Orillia. They had four villages with the main village of Kawigi. The Cord Nation lived between the Sturgeon and Coldwater rivers in the Mount St. Louis Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
The Bear Nation was the largest of the nations, accounting for almost half of the Wendat population. And they were they had 13 villages. Of the Bear Clan in the 1640s.
Okay.
And then the last nation, which is the Deer Nation, that was the last tribe to enter Wendake, which is the Wendat. So, yeah.
Okay.
But you know what's so funny? When I was looking into this, when I went to their site, mm-hmm. it's like French.
Okay.
When it comes to Wendat people.
Okay.
And I think a lot are I'm not sure if they're mate. I'm leaning towards Métis because
I don't know the
chief, when I went to their site, they all look white.
Oh, okay.
Like really white to the point. Sometimes I'm like,
okay.
Side eye. Okay. But I think, I think it's just.
Okay.
Yeah. I was just surprised. It was a surprise.
You want to take a break?
Yes. We went to the march.
Yes.
Not Another Black Life March.
Yeah, I should have stretched.
Yeah, same. Yeah. I should have drank lots of water before we went. It was super hot.
Yeah, it was really hot out that day. Yeah.
It made me realize, holy, I need to exercise.
Yeah, it was pretty emotional too that day. Like seeing everybody around me and, the chanting and stuff like that. Like, yeah, it felt emotional.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was nice to see the kids. I'm so glad we did this as a family.
Yeah, same here.
I'm glad that it was an opportunity to, you know, sometimes when I was thinking too, when we're walking, because I felt like, sometimes I share a lot online about injustices and we talk about it on the show. And sometimes I just feel like, oh, it's just not enough or whatever. But then I'm like, no, like protesting, going out on a protest when people are like, what's the point? Right.
Right.
It's the show strength in numbers. And it just clicked in. It's you hear it, but sometimes it takes to be there for it to click. You know what I mean? You. And it's to show like, hey, to governments or people in power or people who you have a problem with a system or structure and to show up in your body being there. It shows the strength in numbers and it shows like there is a problem and we disagree with this problem.
Yeah.
And it gives a sense of how much there's a problem based on the amount of people that show up.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying? So it made me think that. Like it made me like, that's what it is. It's about showing up in numbers so that way there's a physical, tangible proof that there is a freaking problem and things needs to change. And so it's like I know this, but to be there just really kind of like clicked in.
Yeah.
Did you feel that? Like, what did you think when we were there?
I don't know. I just thought it was great. I thought everybody was super friendly.
Yeah.
It was cool to see how like the organizers would be like kind of staggered throughout the march.
Yes.
And kind of like, start the chanting and things like that. And yeah, it was I want to say fun. You know what I mean? It had a serious tone to it.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah.
It was an experience, right?
Yeah,
it
totally.
It was a way to, in this case, it was because of all the issues that the Peel Region education system how much they target Black kids.
Yeah.
And how so many parents have had issues in terms of the systemic racism in the education system in the Peel Region.
Yep.
And it's so funny because I was talking to a friend and she was saying like, but it's Brampton. Like, was where this happened, right? Isn't Brampton like really, multicultural? And I'm like, yeah, but Brampton, from what I know, is predominantly South Asian.
Right.
And I know that. And, for people really think that being anti-Black means it's white people who are the ones who have stereotypes and prejudices and bigotry against Black people.
Right.
No, there's so many cultures that are non-Black who have major anti-Blackness as design towards someone that looks like me, towards us. Mm-hmm. And so that's a problem too. And I was telling you, somebody tweeted something about like, this is a problem and it has to deal with white supremacy. And I saw a tweet that was interesting. It was someone who was in the South Asian community saying for us, it doesn't relate because it's not white people who created the caste system in India or whatever, but they have anti-Blackness in their culture too. Maybe we'll have to do a whole new show on this. Anywho, I think we do. We do
maybe.
Because I'm still, no, we have to because I'm learning so much.
Okay, well, let's move on then.
No, my point in all this, in bringing up that tweet, it was that even in the caste system in India, the people who suffer the most tend to be the darker skin tone of
people. Oh, so oppression
in
goes
India.
Towards dark skin.
Yes.
Yeah,
like
okay.
Throughout the world.
Gotcha.
Throughout the world.
Yeah.
You look at Australia, who's suffering the most.
I gotcha.
Right? Black people of Australia. And you're going to be like, Black people? Yes. Like the indigenous Black folks, the original indigenous people of Australia on that island, who are also Black, like dark skin, are suffering too.
Gotcha.
So, or are oppressed. That should be the, like oppress. So
I don't know what's happening right now.
I don't know what's happening. But my point is that how anti-blackness doesn't.
I'm just waiting for you to say, and thank you for coming to my
thank
TED
you
Talk.
For coming to my TED Talk. That basically my point in all this is that anti-blackness, the leaning of thinking when someone says anti-blackness that you think it's white people only, that it's not. That's other non-white.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Non-black.
It's a spectrum.
It's a spectrum. Gotcha. And it tends to be very deep throughout the world. So that's my whole point in bringing that up.
All right.
So yeah, so the march was amazing.
It was.
Wow, that went really all over the place. Also, I had a chance to be on a show called The Great Canadian Woman with Sarah.
Didn't you mention that last week?
Yes, but I got like some feedback.
Nice.
Yeah. So one of the feedback I got, it was an anonymous listener, said, "Shirley, I listened to your podcast with Sarah yesterday with crying emoji. I loved it so much. It helped me understand so many things and how now that I have searched." Oh, this is okay. "It helped me understand so many things about how now that I have started to reach out to people in the Black community, how it's going to come off." Mm-hmm. Like, not everyone is going to be excited about it. Yes. I'm so incredibly happy to learn about you, your inspiration. I can't wait for listening to Chonilla so that I can continue learning from you.
Yeah, if you keep learning more, just donate to Chonilla.
That's right. So yeah, so that was a really cool feedback. So
that's great, honey.
Yeah. So that part I appreciated, like the whole not everyone is going to be excited about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And don't be surprised. And that's okay.
That's how it goes.
Because you know, the healing is different for everybody, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
and you're the one doing the learning.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. But yeah. Now I'm good to go into the news.
News, I like news. What is in the news? Yay, the news is not bad.
Did you want to go first?
Oh, you got some news?
Oh, yeah.
I did not know. You go ahead.
All right.
I've been talking so much for the past, four episodes.
I love it, though.
I feel like
I learned
like,
so much.
Talk. And you're like, uh-huh. Talk. I'm like, you don't say. Talk. I told you that bitch is crazy.
I knew that was coming.
Shout out. That's Chris Rock's joke.
So, New Brunswick Premier Blaine Higgs is also a straight-up racist.
Say that again?
New Brunswick Premier Blaine Higgs?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He is also a straight-up racist. So, on June 2nd.
Yeah.
Chantal Moore was murdered by Edmonton police during a wellness check. And Ronnie Levi was also murdered on June 12th after the police responded to a call about a man having knives. And Roger Augustine, mm-hmm. who was the regional chief for New Brunswick and Prince Edward Island for the Assembly of First Nations, said, "We need to stop what is going on in our communities. The shootings got to stop. Our young people need to be protected and need to feel safe."
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's why this is all happening.
Right.
Doing it for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you're like,
Chiefs of the Wolastoqiyik First Nations and Mi'kmaq Nation met with the premier of New Brunswick over like video conference.
Mm-hmm.
And Blaine Higgs denied the request for an inquiry into systemic racism within policing across the province.
Okay.
So, the meeting ended without any action items or resolutions. Mm-hmm. The chief also had to, both of them, also had to deny claims that the provincial government was in dialogue with the Indigenous leaders.
Okay.
Because people were saying like, well, aren't they talking to you?
Nope. Yeah.
They are not. They could see that Blaine Higgs could give a fuck and are taking all their requests for inquiry to the federal government.
Hmm.
The only way they could get these two murders investigated is by bringing in an outside group called the Bureau des Enquêtes Indépendantes,
okay.
who are from Quebec.
Oh, no. That's not going to... Nothing's going to come out of that. Mm-mm.
So Chief Augustine ended up saying, "Let's focus on the Assembly of First Nations and the federal government. I think that all our answers are there. Today was an opportunity for the premier to come in and march with us and support us, and that didn't come."
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, that, and this is the premiere of New Brunswick.
So this is
New Brunswick.
Yeah, correct.
Wow.
So this is where, you know, you always get those people who think like that they can dismiss the claims of a protest because of the agitation that comes with it, right?
Right.
And their first response is like, oh, well, I don't agree with the violence. You know what I mean? I agree with the protest, but I don't agree with the violence, so I'm not going to pay attention.
Yeah.
It's like, no. It's violent like this because this... Because
you're not paying attention.
Those talks are what's been happening.
Yeah.
Like trying to get the New Brunswick premier to do an inquiry on systemic racism within the province's police force.
Mm.
And he's just going to say no.
Yeah.
Two Indigenous people murdered by police.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the month of June.
In less than the month.
Yeah.
Within the month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, we're not going to do that for you. Yeah. Ugh. It's disgusting.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of racism,
because
that's been, you know, talked a lot.
This is Canada.
NDP leader Jagmeet Singh was kicked out of...
That was my next story.
...house for refusing to apologize for calling the Bloc MP a racist.
Yeah, he said, fuck you, racist.
Yeah. So he did not yield Wednesday after being barred from the House of Commons for calling the Black Quebecois MP racist.
Hold on a second. Did you say he got kicked out for calling him a racist?
He
got kicked out because he wouldn't apologize for calling him
a
racist.
Correct. Yeah. Yes. Because they were like, you need to apologize.
Yeah, because now the most important thing are white feelings and you need to apologize.
Right. So he said he was angry. I was angry at the moment and I stand by it. He told, in that moment, I saw the face of racism.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, anyone who wants to vote against that, against what he was trying to convey and push.
Yeah. So if anybody wants to know, the reason he called Terrien a racist is because Terrien blocked what could have been a unanimous vote to approve a motion intended on calling out systemic racism in the RCMP.
Yeah. And even the person who's the House of, the Mr. Speaker. So when he was
I know what you're talking about.
So the Speaker of the House, when even there's a video clip where he's like, okay, everybody, like, you know, everyone votes and everybody's like, yes, you know.
Yeah, we're doing this. We're moving forward.
Right. So he even had an energy and a vibe of, okay, we're going to move forward to this.
Yeah.
And he's like, and then he even asked like, so who else is like against or whatever, but he asked to be polite, like kind of like, come on, like, you know, we all know.
Due
diligence, like we all know this is going to move forward.
Yeah.
And then
are we all good? We're good, right? We're good, right?
Everyone's good. You felt the vibe that everyone's good. Mm-mm-mm. And then when he asked that due diligence questions, like who else is anyone opposed? Kind of like, let me be polite. And then he heard no. And he even reacted like, no.
Yeah.
He went, he was surprised.
Yeah.
He was surprised. The Speaker of the House.
The whole House was surprised.
Yes.
It was going to be unanimous except for Terrien.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, and then, so then he was like, because it's a surprise, he was like, well, that's racist.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, come on.
Yeah.
Like, what else is there?
Blocking an inquiry into systemic racism is literally the definition of fucking racist.
So then he said, we got some problems in the House. We got some problems in the House. Cannot agree to straightforward steps at a time when the public is like decrying police brutality against Indigenous and Black people. He's like, look, like, do you not see the streets?
Yeah.
Do you not like?
Oh, right. You don't give a fuck.
Right.
Yeah.
And then Singh also said marginalized communities are often told that they're not taking the right approach to fighting racism. He said that.
Just like the two chiefs that reached out to the New Brunswick premier.
Right.
Is that not the right approach?
What do you
is that
me
not
to do?
Good enough?
Like what? Like I'm.
What else could
you're telling
could be
me
done?
How to play the game? I abide play it, to play it.
And you say, still, I don't feel like playing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you tell me how to play the game. I play it, and you just say I don't feel like playing anymore.
Yeah. Unbelievable. So then Singh had asked the Commons to recognize their systemic racism in the RCMP and to call on the government to review the police force's budget to ensure the Mounties are truly accountable, examine the county's use of force, and boost non-police spending on mental health and addiction support.
Yep.
And so that's what they're trying to push in motion, right?
Yep.
And there was at least one objection that derailed the move, you know? So though it was unclear who said no at the time, but then now we all know who it was. And so he says no. And then his buddies were like, you need to apologize. Yeah. The guy didn't even ask for an apology.
No.
The guy who said no.
No, is the people around him, is the people in his party.
Yes.
Who were like, you need to apologize to him. Like, I was just like, wow, look at the hierarchy working right now. Right. Look at it work.
But the thing is, so anyway, so now I'm seeing so many people, let alone the same, I'm going to say it, the same white people who have said Black Lives Matter are the same white people who would also say, well, he didn't do it the right way.
Right.
How do he shouldn't freak out, or there's a... It's not even white people. There are also people of color. There are some people who are like, I've seen Black people even say, like, well, there's a, like, it's bureaucracy, it's politics, and there's a decorum.
Yeah, you can get closer to your mic.
Yeah, oh, and there's a decorum, and that's just not the way to do it.
Right,
yeah. But how much do we have to, this whole idea of politeness is ridiculous.
Because when
people are dying.
Yeah, because when it comes as, when it comes through politely, it gets dismissed. It gets like totally flippantly dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyways.
So
Jagmeet also said, I don't back down from standing up to racism. I don't think it benefits for me to call people names. I was angry at the moment and I stand by it.
Good. And he said, in particular, Singh said that there needs to be improved scrutiny of public complaints about incidents involving police. Mm-hmm. We found that throughout Canada, this is an ongoing concern, that the investigations are not conducted in a way where people are left feeling satisfied that it was throughout, or that it was independent. On Tuesday, it again relates to RCMP, Senator Lillian Dick called for RCMP Commissioner Brenda Lukey to resign for failing to understand systemic racism. But then Lukey recently stop short at acknowledging there is entrenched racism in the RCMP, only to agree days later that it does exist. And so there's a video, I'm going to play the video where he explains, and it's actually the right link.
There's been people taking to the streets demanding action on systemic racism. Thousands of people across the world are saying we need to do something about it. We've seen people marching in Canada, across the country, people marching in the States. And some people thought that this wasn't a Canadian issue. This was an American issue, and people were marching in solidarity with people in the U.S. who were demanding action. But for a lot of racialized people, for a lot of Black and Indigenous and people of color, this has been a problem in Canada as well. Systemic racism exists in Canada. So we also have seen some horrible examples in the past couple of months. We've seen these images that are burned into our minds, images of Indigenous people being beaten up and brutalized. We saw images of an Inuk man getting doored, a Chief Adam being beaten up over an expired license plate. And then we've seen RCMP involved in the killing of Indigenous people. Chantal Moore killed in a wellness check, and Rodney Levi killed. And so in this moment where Indigenous people are being killed and being brutalized, Black people are being killed and brutalized in Canada, we have not seen any action. There's been no action. The Prime Minister took a knee, but didn't bring any policy changes. In the States, they moved quicker on some policy changes than even Canada. And we think Canada is a progressive country. But Canada did not bring forward any changes to the federal policing. So people are angry. People are frustrated. So today we brought forward a motion, and the motion was a pretty simple motion. Tackling systemic racism is going to take a lot of work and a lot of effort, but there's some clear steps we can take. One is to call out that yes, indeed, everyone in this House, the House of Commons, in Parliament acknowledges that there is systemic racism in the RCMP. Let's name that and make it clear. And then we went on in the motion to lay out some really clear steps. De-escalation should be your priority. I don't think anyone can disagree with that. We should be reviewing use of force, because people should not be brutally beaten up over an expired license plate. And we put forward some changes around, shouldn't we respond to a health crisis with healthcare workers? Shouldn't they get funding instead of police? And in that moment, we put forward this motion that I thought, given where we are, given what's going on, given the lack of action, here's something we can do concretely to actually make a difference. And when the motion was presented, I heard a lot of people saying yes. And the speaker was about to move forward and accept that there was a lot of yeses. And then I heard one no, and the speaker didn't hear it. And then that MP repeated louder so he could be heard. And I looked back and he saw me look back and kind of shocked that anyone would say no to this motion. Federal jurisdiction, clear path to do something about systemic racism in a moment where everyone's demanding action. And I looked back and I saw that MP not only say no, but make eye contact with me and just kind of brush his hand, dismiss it. And in that moment, I got angry. I'll be honest, I got angry. But I'm sad now. Because why can't we act? Why can't we do something to save people's lives? We can do something. And why would someone say no to that?
I felt him that in that moment because...
No kidding.
What happened to him? And I really hope if it... This is how many people of color, Black,
right.
Black, Indigenous people, and uh-huh. people of color... It's a reminder what he went through of what so many go through at work.
Mm.
So many parents go through when you tell a teacher who is leaning towards white or is white
mm-hmm.
that there's a problem and what's happening and you're telling me to do all these steps to help my kid and I'm doing them, but you're still not, there's something wrong. I'm doing everything you're telling me to do. But my kid is still not doing well. Mm-hmm. What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Or you're telling me to do all this work and I'm giving it to you and beyond, but you're still like not satisfied or you're still like, what is wrong? And there's only, you can only start thinking as a Black, Indigenous, or person of color, the denominator here, it's like, okay, I've done this, check. I've done that, check. They said play the rules, check. You do all this stuff, and then you're like, but what is the problem? And the only thing you can think of, what's different? What's different? What am I doing different? What is the difference eventually? You start thinking to yourself, okay, I'm not going to look at myself. You internalize it at first. And then you realize, okay, I've done everything on my part. What am I missing? Okay, maybe let me look outside of myself.
Right.
Is it where I'm sitting? Is it how what I'm... Like, it's so many things to the point that you're like, ah, that's the common denominator. I'm Black or I'm Indigenous or I'm, you know what I mean, South Asian I'm Asian. That's the difference. Is that possibly the problem here? That you can't, like, what happened to him it's a perfect example of something that everyone agreed to, and then that one asshole says no to kind of, like, create this problem.
Yeah.
He says no to progress. You get upset because you're, like, you're calling out on, I'm upset because you're behaving like this, and you're pointing that out.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how you say it. Yeah. Whether you say it calmly or not calmly, you are being this right now.
Right.
And then people are disagreeing. Like now they're saying, oh no, you can't tell me in this tone that I'm being this and you need to apologize. It's like, so it's, you know what it is? It's like when this happened to our son, when he was bullying and a teacher asks you, okay guys,
our son was bullying?
Our son was bullied, I mean.
Oh, okay.
When it's like asking to shake the hand of a bully. I don't care. Like it's like a teacher telling you, I don't care
you
what
happened.
You have a happened.
Responsibility to shake this bully's hand. Yeah, fuck that.
It's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
But I didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
I'm just standing there.
Yeah.
Or in this case, wait.
I was a target.
Yeah. Or in this case, this guy, the way he's behaving is actually like, this is a prejudice. This is racist.
Yeah.
And you're pointing that out. Oh, I don't like the tone that you said that. You should have had a much better tone to tell me what I really am or what I'm
being.
Before
you speak on your feelings, make sure that your tone doesn't push anything towards
me. So you need to apologize.
Yeah. And if it does, apologize first before we continue speaking about anything.
And what it does is by putting all this, he needs to apologize. It takes away the focus on what happened.
Sure.
The world literally just experienced what every person, what every Black, Indigenous, a person of color feels like,
yeah,
and what it looks like,
yeah,
when you challenge your white counterpart at a predominantly white space.
Yeah.
This is what it looks like.
Yeah.
This is what happens. The focus gets shifted on you have to apologize instead of like looking back at, well, why did you say no?
Right.
This makes it doesn't make sense saying no when like clearly there's a problem. The world, our country is saying, our citizens saying there's a problem.
Yeah.
Let's tackle this.
Yeah.
You know, and you could give me all the reasons or excuses.
And they would rather give the finger to the rest of Canada.
Yeah.
On a unanimous vote.
Yeah.
And watch people keep dying through systemic racism.
Yeah.
Than actually agree with something that comes from outside of Quebec.
And watch how much they're going to keep focusing on the apology.
Oh my God.
And how much we're not going to learn about the policy that they were trying to push. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to see so much in the news about that apology than the actual policy that was supposed to be pushed through.
Yeah, I saw people on Facebook talking about, he knows the rules, he shouldn't have done that,
I've
and he should apologize.
A lot.
And it's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
You're talking about, he called somebody a racist because they used racism to make sure that more people of color and Indigenous and Black people die.
Right.
Like, and he called him out for that, and you want him to apologize? Like, that's the main thing you want?
Yeah.
That's what you need to move forward with?
I saw a tweet, which I question if this person...
That's what you're going to gate saving lives with, is an apology.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we can get to the saving lives later. I just need an apology first.
This is what the person said. I saw it on Twitter, like, was he right that RCMP have major issues regarding hiring POCs? Absolutely. Was it moronic of the Bloc MP to deny the claims? Yes, but it was out of place to use defamatory terms out of frustration.
No, it's not a defamatory term. It's an accurate term for what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And for the way he was behaving, he was being racist.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ugh. Yeah.
It's like how much do you have to break this down for people?
Right.
The system of oppression, racism...
Like,
this is how you contribute to it.
Right. There's a polite way to talk about the fact that people are being oppressed. Come on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Oh,
there's people dying.
No, it's you're because only going to listen to somebody if they're polite enough to you.
Right.
Before you'll hear them tell you that people that look like him or them are dying.
Right.
That the way they talk to you is most important.
Right. Then the message itself and the goal itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. And it's like how many times that I...
And that's whiteness.
That is. Yeah. That is the exact epitome of like whiteness, because I've been in a situation where I saw something wrong. And the fact that I take the time, you as a Black woman, I'm going to say my experience as a Black woman, and you're in a corporate space.
Yeah.
That I have to take the time to maneuver the words that I use... So that way my message comes off.
Without hurting white feelings.
Ugh. But meanwhile, white people, for the most part, or sometimes non-Black.
Think it's funny to say Aunt Jemima.
Will say things, say some really ignorant shit.
Yeah.
And not take the time to think about what they're saying.
Yeah.
But if I call them on it, they get mad at me.
Yeah, you're too sensitive.
What?
You can't take a joke.
What?
You're militant. Ugh.
It's so, yeah. That's the, and I really,
it's the catch 22,
please,
man.
Dissect.
It's the double bind.
Yes, yeah. It's the double bind. This is what he experienced, is an exact example of the double bind.
Oh,
what he experienced right there.
All right.
Some more news. Do you have another news?
I do.
Okay.
You know who Abe Lincoln is, right?
Last I check, yeah.
Yeah.
This dude who's supposed to be,
pretty famous American.
Yeah.
A lot of white Americans specifically will refer to him as though his freeing of the slaves somehow magically changed the culture of the country.
Right.
Well, Leslie Mack over at the Interracial John podcast took her time to gather some knowledge and share it with us.
Shout out, Leslie.
Yes. So I'm going to play that right now.
I wanted to talk about one kind of notion around the Emancipation Proclamation, the Civil War, and the freeing of Black people, which is about Abraham Lincoln. Yeah, you know him. Got that big monument in DC, often referred to as the person who freed the slaves. Well, I just want to dispel folks of any notion that Abraham Lincoln was an abolitionist or that he thought that Black people were in any way equal to white people. And I'll let his words speak for him. So this is from a speech that he made in September of 1858. While I was at the hotel today, an elderly gentleman called upon me to know whether I was really in favor of producing a perfect equality between the Negroes and white people. While I had not proposed to myself on this occasion to say much on the subject, yet as the question was asked of me, I thought I would occupy perhaps 5 minutes in saying something in regard to it. I will say then that I am not, nor have I ever been, in favor of bringing about in any way the social and political equality of the Black and white races. That I am not, nor have I ever been, in favor of making voters or jurors of Negroes, nor of qualifying them to hold office, nor to intermarry with white people. And I will say in addition to this, that there is a physical difference between the white and Black races, which I believe will forbid the two races living together on terms of social or political equality.
So yeah, that was news to me. And I really appreciate that Leslie put that together.
Wow.
But you can go and listen to the entire video on Facebook, follow Leslie Mack, and yeah, get caught up. Happy Juneteenth.
So he's saying like, yeah, I'm going to free them, but not with every rights.
But
is that what he's saying?
Let me tell you something. Let me tell you what the most insidious part that I found about this, just this short little clip.
Okay.
He's being asked to talk about something that he's been like vocal about, right? About, and somebody happened to ask him like, are you really trying to bring these races together? And what he prefaces it with. By saying, let me give this 5 minutes of my time. That's how long it took him to come up with all that racist shit.
Wow.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Wow.
Like, he had to preface it by saying, like, this is so entrenched in my mind, it only takes me 5 minutes to come up with this speech. Yeah. Yeah. And for people to say, like, well, you don't know that, you know, people change. People change.
Sure, people can change.
Yeah,
I've said some pretty ignorant shit on...
I hope he did change.
A lot of stuff.
I hope he did change. But what the point that's being missed is that that's the kind of talk that got him to be president. So it's the people around him that need to change, not fucking Abraham Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't say like, oh, well, people changed, so he probably changed and became like anti-racist. No, that's not the case at all.
No, there was from what I understand is...
America is racist, Canada is racist, and we vote for white supremacy. That's the bottom line.
And... one of the things I learned is that, you know, the reason that they decided to no longer have slavery to continue is because they saw that it wasn't advantageous for them to basically play with the world as the U.S.
Correct.
Because all the other countries were not, they were looking into more globalization.
Yeah.
And so they were like, look, we're thinking this is a much more lucrative approach to capitalism.
Yeah, this wasn't
in terms
like,
of government.
There was zero like moral understanding. It wasn't like a moral shift where it's
pocket.
Like, hey, we're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
It's like, no, hey, we need access to the rest of the world.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the reason that, yeah, they wanted to.
So let's put in enough rules and enough like legislation to make it look like they're free.
Right.
Right.
13th Amendment.
But we know.
Hence
right?
the 13th Amendment.
Wink, wink.
Which was like that wink, wink, where it's like, yeah, sure, you're free.
It says everybody's equal on this piece of paper.
Yeah.
How dare you say that you experience racism?
Right. It's, yeah. Yeah, check it out, Leslie.
Thank you so
Mack.
Much, Leslie.
Thank you, Leslie.
Love you. All right, what else you got, sweetie?
So remember earlier I was telling you I am AKA Hal Johnson?
Yep.
So Hal Johnson.
Body break.
Body break. It's so fun. he spoke about the racism that compelled him to basically make...
I can't even imagine.
First of all, I was really surprised, but let me.
Hi, I'm Hal Johnson from Body Break, and you normally see me giving you fitness and health tips and being very positive, and I'm going to be positive now, but you think that Body Break was started because of fitness. Well, it wasn't. It was started to combat racism. That was the number one reason that we started Body Break, Joanne and I. It happened back in April of 1988, and I was wanting to be a sports reporter, and I went to TSN, and they were very open to see me. I went in and submitted my tape. They loved it, and I got hired by Jack Hutchison at 11 o'clock in the morning, and he was very enthusiastic about me joining TSN. At 2 o'clock that afternoon, I got a phone call, and he said, sorry, but the higher-ups said, because I'm black and they already had Mark Jones, who's now with ESPN, has been there for many years, because they already have a black reporter, they don't want to have two black reporters.
First of all, have you not seen Hal? Hal's really light. He could have passed. But in all seriousness, though.
He was just black enough, Shirley.
Yeah. Yeah. But in all seriousness, they literally were like, oh, no, we've already met our quota, yeah. Our token black guy. We got him. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks, yeah. But no thanks.
Yeah, we got our racism checklist here, and we're good. Thanks, though. Thanks for coming out.
Two is too much for Canada.
Really? One is one too many.
Right. Oh, my gosh. Okay, continues.
Jack was almost in tears, and he was very, very apologetic, and I was... obviously very disappointed.
I can't even imagine the guy who told him, yes, you got the job. And then you hear from your higher up, oh no, that's just way too many black people. And he's like, what? But he's really good.
He's not really dark either.
How do you explain? He's just black.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, he's too black.
Yeah.
That was considered too much blackness for Canadian television. Yeah.
The next month, I then subsequently met Joanne, which was my good fortune and my good luck.
So they met, it was so cute, at a gym where he worked out. Yeah. Yeah. So a month before all this, him meeting or having the TSN job, they met at a gym. They're both athletic. And then the second time he saw her again and then they got together. So it's cute. That's how they met.
And we started talking about doing something in television together, something fitness or something, along those lines, because Joanne's background. But then on June 8th of 1988, I was doing a commercial. And that commercial was at Woodbine Racetrack. And there was three of us. There was myself, a white young lady, and a white guy. And we're rehearsing, cheering. And then after about a half hour of that, just ready before we were going to shoot, the assistant director goes to the director and says something. And then the director tells the white guy and white girl to switch positions. So it's myself, the white guy, and the white girl's on the end. So at lunch, I then talk to the assistant director as we're in the buffet line. And I just tap him on the shoulder and ask him, why did you switch the two of us? And he said, he laughed. He said, the client really didn't want you next to the white girl because, God forbid, somebody might think you're with the white girl. And then
God forbid.
You know Hal knew. Hal knew. That's why he asked.
Yeah.
Hal's like,
my racism detector is
telling me something's up.
It's redlining right now.
Right. But let me confirm what I'm feeling. Mm. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And let me ask. And so that's the answer. Yeah.
Yeah. Myth confirmed. Yeah.
You can't be standing next to the white girl.
Yeah. Don't you know how funny that is?
Right.
We don't want people to think, God forbid, that you're in a relationship with a white woman. Oh, my God.
Because we ain't ready.
Can you imagine how?
Right.
And I didn't get mad. I just thought about it. My dad had always told me, never get mad at something, because when you get mad, you can't find a solution to it.
So real.
So that afternoon, after lunch, I took a piece of paper and I just wrote out kind of a storyboard. And I thought, how can I change things? How can I make that we can all live, work, and play together? And there won't be this attitude that white and black and Asian and persons with disabilities and male, female, we all can't be together. So I came up with this idea, and the idea is Body Break. And that was really the formulation of the idea. I then took it around after Joanne and I had produced this, which we had no production background at all, but we took this around to 42 different companies and were turned down by every one. But then I went to TSN again and I saw the program director this time, a different gentleman, and he loved the show and I was excited. And he said, yes, we'll take it. However, the problem is you're black and the young lady, I remember him saying, the young lady is white. And so we don't think the Canadian public is ready for a black and white couple together.
Okay, let me say this. Is this,
you know,
my...
people said that Canada wasn't ready for a black governor general either.
Mm,
yeah.
Right. It's interesting. It's very poignant what he says, the young lady. And
keep talking,
I'm
listening.
This is the third time I'm hearing this or saw this video. What's poignant about him is the fact that he said, you're black and the young lady. It puts that, you know, like she's a young lady.
Right.
Like she's fragile. Mm. She's white and fragile and a lady, mm-hmm. and you're black.
Oh my goodness.
Right? It's just these little language, right? And the fact that he says, I remember him saying the young lady.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like I hear you. You ain't saying it, but I hear what you're saying, the fact that you're pointing that out. It's like, you know what I mean?
I thought about that, and he said, if you change the white, if you change the person, your part to be a white gentleman, we'll take it on the air. Well, I went home that afternoon, and I looked at the phone and thought, who can I call? What can I do? Who can I call? What can I do? And after a half an hour of chanting that and looking at the phone, I yelled over to Joanne, who does the fitness and multiculturalism for Canada? And she said, Participaction. So I then picked up the phone, called Participaction, had a meeting in 2 days, and within a very, very short period of time, we had a contract for 6 episodes, and then we subsequently did 65 for Participaction. So it was without TSN spawning me to think, to go that route, without the racism that they displayed, without the racism of June 8th of 1988 by that client at Woodbine Racetrack. All those little things created Body Break, and we're happy to have hopefully given health and fitness tips to Canadians for 32 years, but also enlightened you that we all can live, work, and play together, regardless of our ability, disability, or skin color.
So he goes on CBC, and it's so good that he shared that. First of all, when I saw that, I was shocked. I was like, what? Body Break was like inspired, like was created to fight racism. And I'm so glad he pushed through, because I remember when I was a kid, and I shared this in my social, like, I remember being maybe between 7 or 8 years old, seeing him. And I thought, as a kid, I'm just thinking that, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's like, okay, whatever, Body Break. Okay, what's that? But then I looked closely, because I was like, hey, this guy kind of looks different than my kid brain saw. His skin tone wasn't quite the same hue or color
as the rest of the people on Canadian television.
Right.
Yeah.
No, but right next to the lady, uh-huh. right, that he was with. And I remember seeing that, and I kind of looked closer, and I was like, I think he's black.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But I remember my dad calling them a zebra couple.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't flinch. I didn't ask any questions about it. It was, you know, the context clue was all there. Black and white. Got it. Yeah.
I see my face right now.
I totally, yeah. I just remember that a couple minutes ago.
Really?
It just
came to you.
Yeah.
Wow.
And there was a, we lived in a duplex at one point.
Wow.
And there was a interracial couple that lived upstairs from us, and my dad referred to them as a zebra couple as well. Yeah.
He said, "Watch, Father. I'll bring you zebra.
I'll show you zebra."
Wow.
Sorry to derail it. Go.
No, no. It's wow. It's just, but I'm, and anyway, later, my brother reminded me that we talked about it again. And he remembered he was in his childhood. I think I was in my early teens, like 13, 12 or 13 or something.
Roger that.
And we both were talking it out because this time I could speak and not just kind of like, oh, think about it. Mm-hmm. Like, who? I didn't have anyone as a kid to communicate.
Right.
Like, this guy, I think, is black.
Right.
You know, I just, I didn't have the language, but I just recognized a little bit. I was like, oh, I think he's part of my people.
Yeah, your reality comes with like patterns that you recognize. Right.
Right.
And when something falls out of that pattern, you're like,
wait a minute. Right. So my kid brain was like, as between 6 to 8 years old, like, oh, I think he's part of me. Right. But then my brother reminded me, remember we were talking about it? Like, I think this guy's black. And he was saying how we had a back and forth, like, we both looked closely at the screen. Mm. Like, we got real close and we're like, oh yeah, he black. You know what I mean? And then we're like, what? My point is that it was, I'm glad that he pushed through because seeing Hal really made me think, especially because when I was a kid, I used to play pretend radio and like pretend like host, and to see him as a kid reaffirmed like it's possible.
Mm.
And I know that there's so many kids who either look like him or look like me. And we're like, oh, it makes it like, oh, it's possible.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, representation matters.
It really does.
Yeah.
And so thank you, Hal, for pushing through because we got to see ourselves as black kids in you.
That's amazing.
You know, so that was my point.
Very cool.
Aunt Jemima.
Oh, okay, we all know it's bullshit. Okay, let's move on.
What?
I'm just kidding. Go.
So their brand is retired due to racial stereotypes that changes. So they're making changes, and changes may be coming to Uncle Ben and other brands as well.
They better.
Yeah. So Quaker Oats, they're retiring. It's 131 year old.
Quaker Oats?
And Jemima brand.
The Aunt Jemima brand
is 131 years old.
Oh my God.
Saying that the company recognizes the character's origins are based on racial stereotype. Just hours later, the owner of the Uncle Ben's brand says that the brand will evolve in response to concerns about racial stereotyping as well.
Yeah, hopefully it won't take another 130 years next time.
So I was sharing that this news was really like, it hit me hard because when I was in high school, someone I know very closely used to call me Aunt Jemima.
Mm-hmm.
And I would tell this person how much it was just not cool to call me that.
Right.
I didn't have much of the language in my teens to say why, but I just knew what the stereotype and mammy and all that stuff represented. And I felt at the time that this person was pointing out two things: my blackness, the beautiful dark skin hue of my skin, but also my size.
Right.
And this person didn't think it was a big deal. Like, they were like, "No, I'm just saying like it's cute, like trying to
jokes,
say like,
it's funny,
but
right?
It's like, no, you're characterizing those aspects of me. Like, I'm not a."
Yeah. Freaking, you're being an asshole.
You're,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so I kept saying, like, you know, it wasn't cool and to stop. And the thing is, when I thought about it and when I brought up the story, until this day, I have had moments, even I've brought it home, where there's sometimes, like I was telling you in a previous episode, there's some days, for the most part, my backbone is strong. But there's sometimes, like, my backbone can be real weak. And there are times it's so micro, but I look at the name And it brings me back to that moment in my life, right?
Okay.
Like the thinking of what's behind and the stereotyping and the racial everything related to the Aunt Jemima, right? And so then I thought about it, like, when you experience someone calling either Aunt Jemima or someone who says, I don't see color, mm-hmm. or minimizes things related to your blackness,
yeah.
and they say they're your friend, or they say that they, you know what I mean? Like in a relationship, some kind of connectivity,
yeah,
or thing around,
yeah.
you. For me, it reminded me that this person has never displayed that if ever there was a situation where it's either a racist situation or is witnessing some kind of injustice that's happening to me, I lean towards and have very high doubt that this person would stand up for me.
Mm.
And that's what it feels like. Mm-hmm. Like I can more likely trust that this person wouldn't be there during those circumstances,
right.
based on the fact that this person have said things like Aunt Jemima to me in my youth, or have said that Black Lives Matter at the time when people didn't understand fully Black Lives Matter the way that they understand now is a terrorist group. Like those things that
yeah.
that all hints to the fact that
they're denying
my existence. And I don't know, if you deny my existence, does that mean that you would stand up for me? I don't think so, based on some of the stuff that you're saying. You know?
Yeah, one easily follows the other.
Right. And yeah. so I shared my story, and I was very, it goes to show you that some people, I saw someone say, oh, I understand why they're taking it off, but I'm going to miss her face and her picture.
I saw people say, like, are we really like taking down these like positive black like role models kind of thing? And I was
Do you not know the history?
They don't.
Positive they don't. Role models?
Surely you're talking to, right. about people that don't care.
Correct. Yeah.
No, let me rephrase that. They care about their syrup.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But I
now the blacks are coming from my syrup. What's next, Uncle Ben? They're going to come from my rice.
So, but the thing is it's so interesting that it's not even interesting that if people would take the time to read stories when I shared what I shared, and I'm not the only one. I've seen so many.
Mm.
Who've shared stories, like I'm going to
give you. Thanks for sharing that, by the way.
Oh, you're welcome. Some example, like Kenny, for example, said, Kenny is Robinson is a comedian in Canada. He's like, he's the black godfather of comedy in Canada. Okay. If you don't know Kenny, then you need to Google. Okay.
I will Google later.
But he hosts, I think every last Sunday of the month on Yuck Yuck.
Mm-hmm.
The Nubian show, actually. They're actually about to hit 25th anniversary of him hosting this, which it gives the opportunity for black comics and also a variety of comics, but particularly spotlight black comedians in Canada. So he was saying, worse was the commercial. We want Aunt Jemima for lunch. Kids would sing it at my cousin, and I would ride our bikes past them. My aunt told us to tell them to go home and get their mom to make them some. One day, I just got off my bike and served up a small stack of smacks.
Yes.
So, and other people said, Alexis, for example, said, my boss at Wahlburger called me Aunt Jemima when I wore my headscarves. It was despicable. End result, I got called insubordinate.
Right.
And I was fired shortly after.
Because she stood up for her agency and her integrity and said, no,
and,
asshole, yeah. no.
Was fired shortly after telling him that's racist.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, didn't somebody,
Yeah.
got kicked out
here's,
for saying that?
Here's how you can manifest white fragility. call a white person racist.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Just call them out for their racism.
Yeah.
And watch what happens.
So Alexis continues
saying, "You're racist for talking about racism."
Yeah. And then Alexis continues saying, "Anyways, a long drawn out trial. I was brought back to another unit as I'm ununionized, and there was truly no grounds to fire me. That's that Canadian systemic shit for you."
Yep. Yeah. There it is.
Joanne said, "Yes, I too was called this because I wore a headscarf in high school. Was called Aunt Jemima for that." And then another Claire Pierin says, "I can totally relate with you. Spick, Sen, N-word, I'm not going to say it, Packy, Aunt Jemima. Wait, I'm not going to say N-word, but I say Packy. Girl."
I wasn't going to say anything.
And I said Spick too, girl. So for context, I will say it all because I need you to understand like how bad that is.
Drop it.
This Claire was called Spick, Sen, Nigger, Packy, Aunt Jemima. These are just a few of the names that haunt me to this day. Mm. I was too young at that age to even realize that my skin color made a difference.
Yeah.
Being the only brown kid with a black brother and white parents was a sure conversation starter. Mm-hmm. Moving from one central Alberta small town of mostly white people to another didn't seem to get any easier. Mm-hmm. Piping in on classroom convos and how Brooke and her sister has the same nose. Meanwhile, I would joke that my brother and I were twins. I never felt like I had a place in the world. Mm-hmm. One time in the fourth grade at recess, a group of white boys surrounded me in the corner of J.S. McCormick school grounds, taunting and poking me with a long stick with red tape on it.
Oh, my God.
The same stick they used to poke a beaver with earlier in the week. What did I do wrong? My young mind was left wondering. A couple of memorable personal experiences from when I was a kid, and even with Trinidad in my blood, I was a skin color that wasn't passably white in a small town. Therefore, somehow still became an easy target. Another kid asked if my brother's skin was so dark because he got injected. I'll never forget that either. It never occurred that other kids thought like that. That racism, the racism that people will visibly dark skin tones than mine have received anger, hate, microaggressions and racist undertones their whole lives, and the taunting I receive, I know, is nothing compared to what my darker skin brothers and sisters go through. A note to my white friends: just because you haven't or don't experience it yourself doesn't mean it doesn't happen or it doesn't affect you. There should be no shame felt on your part for being born into a racist society. That's not on you. However, it is on you to speak up. You will never know what it's like to live a day as a black person and consider yourself privileged. If having these conversations make you feel uncomfortable, they should. Standing by awkwardly silent is more awkward than speaking up. If you're not speaking up in these convos, you are allowing racism to happen. That may be hard to hear, but it's true. I've stood for years being complicit at times myself. Enough is enough. It is simply not enough to be non-racist. It is time to be vocally anti-racist. So that's what Claire shared.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. So
thanks for sharing that, Claire.
Thank you, Claire. Thank you, Kenny. Thank you, Alexis. Thank you, Joanne, for sharing your experience. And it just goes to show you, like, this is like a brand. So for people who think, oh, it's just no big deal. Well, look.
They're coming from my syrups.
Right. But reading these stories, it affects many.
Yeah.
That brand has affected people for how long? 131 years.
Forever. Since its inception.
Taunting.
Since its inception.
Harassing.
Yes.
Without saying anything.
Yes.
Like being in the counter.
Yep.
On the counter. And you're like.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. That's it for the news. Sorry, I know.
That's okay.
So much news. It's just so much shit in the world, Clem. I can't help it.
I know.
Bible scriptures, 90210.
All right, Shirley. This is the part of the podcast where I share what I've read in the Bible and parody it by regurgitating it as an Aaron spelling like melodrama.
All right.
All right. So last time, we heard about the dismemberment of a concubine, a whole bunch of stolen virgins.
Oh, wow, right.
And we also heard about the end of Judges. Mm-hmm. The players tonight are Elimelech, Naomi, / Mara, their two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, Orpah. Orpah, and Ruth and Boaz.
Okay.
So tonight we're getting into the Book of Ruth.
This is a new book.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that there was a book called Ruth, you know.
Yeah, I didn't know either.
Wow.
I think it was added later when everybody was like, hey, where's all the women?
You think?
I think so.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Mm. So, Ruth, chapter 1. Don't call me that anymore. That's what I call it.
Wow.
That's the title. Yeah.
Ruth, I can relate.
So this chapter starts by introducing us to an Ephraimite family that is from Bethlehem.
Mm-hmm.
The father's name is Elimelech.
I like that name.
His wife's name is Naomi.
Beautiful.
And they have two sons named Mahlon and Chilion.
Okay.
Turns out that around this time, there was a famine and Elimelech decides to move his family to a place called Moab.
Okay.
He decides to move them there so that they won't die from all the famine. And
famine sucks.
Yeah, famine's the worst.
Yeah.
After living in Moab for about 10 years, after relocating there, Elimelech winds up dying. And Naomi is left to raise her sons all alone. Both her sons end up marrying women from the place that they moved to, Moab. And their names, the names of the women they married is Orpah and Ruth.
Okay.
So Ruth is introduced in this story as it's almost spelled like Oprah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And so Ruth is introduced in this story as the wife of one of Elimelech's sons.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Got it.
So, but shortly after Elimelech dies, Naomi's two sons die. So it's just her and the two other widows.
Okay.
Ruth and Orpah. Yeah. Okay. So now Naomi started to hear that the famine was over in Bethlehem. So she decides to pack up and head back. But she realizes that her daughters-in-law are from Moab and tells them, thanks so much for everything, but you need to go back and live with your mothers. Hopefully God will let you have another husband. And then Naomi kisses her daughters-in-law on the forehead, and then they all had a good crying session together.
Aww.
Yeah.
They're like, I can't afford you, girls.
Yeah.
That's what she's saying.
That's real. So once the crying started to slow down, Orpah and Ruth are all like, no way, girl. We're going to go back to Jerusalem with you. And Naomi wasn't having that. So she was all like, nah, you need to go home. It's not like I can make more husbands for you. I'm not feeling another husband right now. And even if I wasn't, it's not like I could push out a couple of boys or that you could wait for them to be old enough to marry. This is harder for me than it is for you.
Mm.
And she said it's harder for her than it is for them because she felt that God wasn't feeling her right then.
Aww.
Yeah. This causes them to all start crying again. And Orpah kisses Naomi and says goodbye. But Ruth, instead, clings on to Naomi, and Naomi is all like, Ruth, you need to go with Orpah and go back to your people and your gods. And Ruth starts to beg and is all like, I don't want to turn my back on you, girl.
Wait, so hold on. So she said to both of them, you need to go.
Yeah.
And then realize one of them, she's like, wait, not you.
No. One of them decides to stay. Is like, no, I'm not leaving you.
Oh, got it. Okay.
She's like, I'm down to go where you go, live where you live, and worship the God you worship.
Okay.
I want to die where you die and be buried next to you. I hope God kills me if you die first. So Naomi was a little surprised and was like, damn, girl, fine, let's go together. So when the two women arrived in Bethlehem, we find out that the barley harvest was just getting started. And the people from Bethlehem recognized Naomi and were all like, God damn, is that you, Naomi? And Naomi was all like, listen, everyone, I'm changing my name to Mara from now on. I don't want to think about all the tragedies God gave me under that other name. So everyone agrees. And both Mara and Ruth both settle in Jerusalem to try to continue living their best lives.
Oh, okay.
So we go on to Ruth chapter 2. Spill the tea already, damn. In this chapter, we find out that the Bible still refers to Mara as Naomi. So they keep calling her Naomi, even though she said...
That's not my name no more.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And that her late husband knew a guy named Boaz, who supposedly is really respected in Bethlehem. Ruth one day says to Mara, think I'll go hang out in the fields today and pick up some grains that might get dropped by someone who might think I'm cute.
Okay.
So Mara...
Why do I feel like she's dropping the grains slowly, like...
You know, she's picking them up all nice and slow.
All slow,
like,
yeah.
I got you. So Mara was all like, that sounds like a great idea. She winds up finding her way to Boaz's field and starts to follow some of the farmers to see if anyone notices her.
Game on.
So some time goes by and Boaz shows up to his field and greets all the farmers who are busy working and is all like, hey, everyone, God is good.
All the time.
And all the farmers were like,
all the time.
But Boaz notices Ruth and turns to one of his supervisors all like, who the hell is that? And who does she belong to? The supervisor is all like, that's that Moabite girl that came back with Naomi. Sorry, Mara.
Oh.
She wanted to pick up. You know, so he's saying she wanted to pick up after the farmers and has been here since the sun came up and has only taken one break in the shade.
Wow.
So Boaz, he looks at Ruth and is all like, you're not going to work for anyone but me, okay? I told the men in the field to keep their hands off you, and if you want some water, you can drink from the water bottles that the men filled. So Ruth is a little surprised and asks Boaz, are you always this thirsty around foreign women?
Wow. Coming along really strong.
Right. So Boaz.
Ruth is not playing.
So Boaz is all like, nah, girl, I've just heard about how loyal you've been to your mother-in-law after both your husbands died. And that you gave everything up to stay by her side. Hopefully God hooks you up with some happiness and a safe place to stay. So Ruth now, feeling way more at ease, and she's all like, thanks for saying those nice things, but I don't deserve it.
He's not picking up the signals. Wow, dude, my dude.
So when lunch break came around, Boaz asked Ruth to sit next to him and to have some of the bread dipped in wine vinegar. When she sat with all the harvesters, Boaz gave her some roasted grains to eat.
Ah.
She only, she only ate a little bit of it, and then she went to go work back in the fields. So Boaz addressed all the harvesters like, I don't want to see anyone messing with Ruth, you dig? No bullshit. And when she needs help, I expect everyone to lend a hand. So Ruth picked up after the harvesters until the sun went down. And she brought home like 30 pounds of grain along with the leftover roasted grains. And Mara, formerly known as Naomi, was all excited and asked, so tell me everything. Where did you go? And did anyone notice how cute you look? And Ruth was all like, yeah, his name is Boaz. And he is super nice to everyone. This surprises Mara. And she's all like, Boaz? I know that guy. He's totally related to my husband. And one of our guardian redeemers. This is great. So Ruth, even more excited now, and says, are you being serious with me right now? He's even asked me to stick around until everyone was done working. So now Mara is super relieved. And she's all like, it's a good thing you ended up in Boaz's field because you never know with some of these fuckboy landowners around here. So Mara then advised Ruth to stay close to the other women in the field who's working. And from there, Ruth and Mara continued to live together.
Okay.
Chapter 3. He's totally into you.
This is is how people like before Tinder and all that.
Right. So some time goes by and Mara, formerly known as Naomi, mm-hmm. says to Ruth, "You need to find a man, girl. What about your relative Boaz?"
Right.
Yeah. "Here's what you need to do. Get washed up, put on some perfume, and put on some fresh threads. Then, after Boaz is finished with the winnowing tonight, he'll be laying down to get some sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let him know you're there until he's done work and finished eating and drinking. Once he finds a comfortable spot to sleep on the threshing floor, go lie down at his feet and uncover them nice and gently. And don't worry, he'll tell you what to do after that."
Mm-hmm.
So Ruth is all like, "You always have good ideas, Mara, and I'll do whatever you think is best." So that night, when Boaz finishes winnowing the grain and was feeling good after eating and drinking, went to find a pile of grain to sleep in. Once he laid down and fell asleep, Ruth came over nice and quietly, uncovered Boaz's feet, and laid down by his feet. In the middle of the night, he woke up and was startled. And he was startled that there was a woman lying down at his feet.
Mm-hmm.
And he's all like, "Yo, where the fuck did you come from?"
Whoa.
And Ruth was all like, "It's me, Ruth, your servant. Can you cover me with your skirt since you're a guardian redeemer?" Mm. So Boaz is all like, "Yeah, sure. You're so kind to have not gone after a younger man with more money. Don't worry, I got you.
Okay.
Everyone in town knows you're a good person, but we need to check with another guardian redeemer first. And if they don't want you, I swear to God that I will take care of you. Just stay here until the sun comes up."
Why do you have to check? Just, okay.
So she laid down at his feet until the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And when they woke up, Boaz told Ruth that she needed to dip before anyone recognized her or that she had spent the night on the threshing floor with Boaz. But before leaving, Boaz gave her a bunch of barley to take home. When Mara saw Ruth, she was all like, "Tell me everything." So Ruth got Mara all caught up, and Mara was all like, "Girl, this is great. You'll hear back soon because I'm positive Boaz is going to get this whole thing straightened out right away."
I'm so nervous. What do I feel? Somebody's going to get killed because it's the Bible.
Ruth chapter 4.
My goodness, it's so the bad to think, but...
The Guardian Redeemers trade sandals.
Oh, boy. Wait a minute.
So it turns out Boaz is a get-shit-done kind of guy and calls a meeting with 10 of the city elders and the Guardian Redeemer, who somehow has the right to Ruth before Moab.
Okay. Here we go. Yeah.
So now that they're all together, Boaz, sorry. He's all like, "Hey, y'all. So we all know that Mara, formerly known as Naomi, is back home now. And she told me that she wants to offload her property. And I wanted to let you know it's for sale first. And that if you don't want it, I'll buy it to keep it within the Elimelech clan."
Mm-hmm.
So the Guardian Redeemer was all like, "Yeah, okay, sure. I'll buy it." So Boaz is all surprised and he adds, "You know that the Moabite woman Ruth comes with the package, right?"
Why would he? Okay.
So then the other guardian redeemer was all like, "Oh, really? Why didn't you lead with that? I'm out. You can have it."
Okay. And
the guardian redeemer gave one of his sandals to Boaz. From what I understand in the Bible, to confirm a contract, one of them would offer one their flippy floppies.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Okay. So it's kind of like, I'm going to start going around people with my flippy floppies and just like,
and just hand it to them. It's a deal.
Yeah.
And you're like, and what?
What?
So then Boaz turned to the 10 elders and said, "You all saw this, right?" And the elders were getting tired at this point and were all like, "Yep, all good. Best of luck. And hope you all become famous." So once Ruth and Boaz were married, the Bible says that God allowed her to make babies.
Okay.
And she had a son. People were so happy about this that Mara had women coming up to her all like, "That's your son. God is good.
All the time."
And they all agreed to name her son Obed, who turns out to be King David's grandfather.
King David's grandfather. Oh, for real?
Yep.
As in David?
Yes.
David and Goliath?
I think so.
We will see.
So, fun Bible facts. The name Naomi means pleasant, and the name Mara means bitter. Guardian Redeemers.
Wait, say that again?
Okay. The name Naomi means pleasant, and the name Mara means bitter.
Huh, okay.
Guardian Redeemers were usually ballers.
They were?
Yeah, because they had to pick up the pieces if the husband died, right? Bible scholars argue if uncovering feet is code for sex or not.
Wow.
Yeah, next time we'll hear about the first book of Samuel and Samuel's miraculous birth.
Pass the plate and donate. Pass the plate, you gotta donate. Well, we learned about the book of Ruth. Chapters 1, 2, 3, and 4. Ruth spilled. Don't call that anymore.
Spilled not clean.
And they spilled. She spilled the tea. Pop. All things is great. Ruth got babies and a man, and it's all good. Ooh, pass the plate and donate. Pass the plate and donate. Pass the plate and donate. Pass the plate, you gotta donate. Why do I keep doing that high? Go to chonillanetwork.com. If you've been enjoying the show so far, you've learned something. When you get to the chonillanetwork.com, at the top right corner, click donate. $5 is truly appreciated. It keeps us going to provide you everything that you're hearing on the show, including Bible Scriptures 90210. Yeah.
All right.
With my jazz hands. That was a long show. I don't have anything else, I promise.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
We're done?
We're done. We can wrap it up. Follow us real quick. Just go to Chonilla Love on Instagram, Chonilla on Twitter. Email us, chonillapodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you think of the show. If you have any question, or when you go to chonillanetwork.com and you click on Chonilla, there is an area now that you can leave a message for us. And hey, you never know, we might play it on the show. If you, again, enjoyed the show, leave a review. This is a great way for us to, for more people to discover what we're doing. But also leave a 5-star and you might read it on the show too. Any quote?
Yes, I definitely have a quote. This quote is, "It is better to wear out than to rust out."
Mm.
That was Marianne Shad Carey. And she's best known for launching an abolitionist newspaper, the Provincial Freeman, in Windsor, Ontario.
She settled in Canada.
She had the distinction of being the first woman publisher of any race or background in Canada. That's... and the first African-American woman publisher in all of North America.
Wow, black woman. What? Black girl magic.
Thanks for sharing your stories. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you for your patience.
Until next time.
Truly appreciate it.
Love you.
Peace.
Bye.
Have a little vodka. That's only the first sip.
It's gonna get turnt tonight.
Oh. Ice cream man. It's not the regular ice cream man that comes. It's like the new guy. It's so much
I heard a different song.
It's much more cleaner than that.
It smelled like old ice cream, old dry ice cream.
I can't believe you got close enough to smell it.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't even want to come that close I wanted to stay in the denial.
Yeah.
You know, you should buy ice cream from there, but it's ice cream.
what am I going to do? It's super hot outside.
Right. So I was like,
what always kind of throws me off when I get to the ice cream truck, though, is if you stand next to it just right, it's super hot. Like, there's all this hot air coming
That's
in, right?
That's so true.
Right. And that just, like, makes me think that everything is, like, melted inside the truck.
Yeah.
Makes me think everything inside the truck is hot like that.
Right. That's so true. And that's what's, that's why the ice cream goes fast, because all that hot air that's blowing on you when you're holding it as you're getting ready to pay. You're like, why is it melting so fast?
Yeah, it got really hot out.
Jeez. I just realized this now.
Yeah.
Because I was holding Ronan's ice cream. I know he didn't want any, but I still got him something.
Right. And he ate it though, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Fast, too. Like, tongue all over. I was like, whoa, okay. And he's like, Mom, I said I didn't want. I'm like, I just want to make sure that I have everything. Oh, that's what I wanted. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yes, it's true. You're my baby boo. I know it. I feel it. That's how I sing a song. I'm so glad I know ya. Gonna podcast on Father's Day with you. With you. Singing style. Yes.
Hey, did you want to get into the news?
No.
Okay, go.
Not yet. Not yet. Wait, man.
Wait, you're still listening to podcasts? Well, if you love this episode of the Tronilla Podcast so much, just head over to iTunes or Spotify to subscribe and leave a review, I guess.